So I was texting with a girl to sleep at her place, and the idea eventually was to go to her place first, have a shower, and then meet my father. But when I got close to Kayseri, I knew I want to arrive at his place with my bike. Like, I need to cycle there. This was the whole idea of my journey.
Welcome to the Seek Travel Ride podcast, where we share the stories and experiences of people who have undertaken amazing adventures by bike. Whether it's crossing state borders, mountain ranges, countries or continents, we want to share that spirit of adventuring on two wheels with our listeners. Welcome to the Seek Travel Ride podcast. I'm your host, Bella Malloy, and I'm happy to introduce our guest for today's episode, Madeline Hoffman. Madeline recently completed a monumental journey of personal discovery as she made her way from Germany, cycling through 11 countries until reaching her final destination in Turkey. Madeline, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Bella.
So I always like to start my podcast asking my guests the same question, and it is, can you please tell me about the very first bike that you ever rode?
Oof. The very first bike I ever rode. I'm actually not sure if I can. I think it must have been like some secondhand bike when I was a child. But I cannot clearly remember because I think I learned riding a bike quite late for a child, to be honest, because, you know, growing up with a single mom, not having so much money. So, yeah.
No, absolutely, absolutely. When you say you came to cycling quite late as a child, how old do you think that would have been?
Maybe like 7 or 8 or 9, but I remember that my grandma actually bought me my first real bike, I think. So she gave me money so I could actually buy a bike. So I remember that because later on in life, I used that bike to travel to my work, actually. So that bike played quite a big role in my life. And yes, my grandma bought it for me.
Oh, wow. Oh, no, that is so cool, actually.
Yeah, it is actually. She's also a very important person in my life. So, yeah.
Oh, I imagine. So, Madeline, you set out on, I guess, what I've labeled a journey of discovery. And I'm sorry if that sounds a bit cliche, but 4.5 months ago, you set out on this journey. But I really feel that this journey began for you 7 years ago. Can you share with our listeners some background to your story here?
Yeah, so 7 years ago, I got to know that I'm half Turkish because 7 years ago, I, for the first time, got to know the identity of my father, and he turned out to be Turkish. So that was a huge surprise for me. Until that day, I actually thought that I'm, you know, growing up in Germany, 100% German, even though I never knew who my father was. And yeah, when I got to know that he's Turkish, I was like, wow. Looked in the mirror and thought, wow, I'm half Turkish.
And I imagine, you know, well, I can't imagine, but if I try and put myself in your shoes, it's probably, as you say, you've spent up to that point in your life thinking that you're something and then realizing a key part of you is something totally different to what you had considered.
Yes. I mean, growing up, there was, of course, always the question about the identity of my father because I had no information, no name, nothing, no photo. So there was always this huge question mark in my life, who I am, who's my father, and yeah, finally, when I was 26, he got in contact with my sister and myself, and then the big surprise came that he was Turkish.
Far out. And you weren't in Germany at this stage, were you?
Correct. I was already living in Australia while he at this stage was in Germany, because a huge part of his life, he was living in Germany, actually, just 20 minutes by car from the place I have been living my whole life.
Yeah, wow. I imagine just even knowing that little thought would take a bit of time to process as well.
Yes, it took me a while to process. It was quite a shock, of course, also knowing that he was so close this whole time. Even though I needed to look up that town he was living at, because I have not heard of it, but it was actually really close.
So you find this information out 7 years ago. What led you to the idea and the motivation to set out on this trip? Because you've made the decision that you want to meet your father now. You're in Australia at the time and your father's in Turkey. Tell us a bit about the idea for this trip itself.
So when I got to know about it 7 years ago, I wasn't ready to meet my father. So the years passed and I had time to recover from this information and to make peace with my feelings. And years passed and I finally thought I am ready to meet him. Of course, also, it was not so easy to just like fly from Australia to Germany. Like, the flights are long and the flights are expensive. So it's not so easy to just quickly meet him, of course, and take leave from my job, which I had back then. And then 2020, I was invited to a wedding in Germany. And I was planning to go there and I thought I should finally meet him. At this stage, my father was already in Turkey. So I thought I wanted to go to Europe for 3 weeks. So I was thinking, okay, how could I go in 3 weeks to Germany, but also to Turkey? Back then, I was thinking of renting a car, hitchhiking, taking the train. But of course, all of these plans got cancelled because of COVID. And I couldn't go to the wedding or go on this holiday. And yeah, during COVID, I started to watch a lot of bikepacking vlogs. And I started to cycle longer distances, like, you know, like 80 kilometers. I never had done anything like this in my life. And then, I was really obsessed with these bikepacking vlogs and watched more and more. And then eventually I was like, oh, this is something I would like to do. And then I was wondering where I would cycle to. And my first idea was kind of South America, because I like adventure and I like I also was learning, like, studying Spanish at this time, so I thought it would be perfect. But then suddenly I had the idea that I really need to go to Turkey to, like, get to know my second culture and finally meet my father, finally find the last jigsaw puzzle that was missing. Yeah, so the idea was born that I need to cycle from Germany, from my old culture to my new culture, Turkey.
Wow, and so you've got this thirst for cycling. You cycled 80 kilometres far out, like Germany to Turkey. as you said, it's not a simple three-week holiday. So how did you organise your life even to make this possible?
Yeah, of course, there was a lot to organize. Like, it was a lot because I needed to sublet my flat in Sydney. I also have a cat, so I bought like cat food for half a year. I needed to find two people who are able to look after my cat, live in my flat until I come back. I was looking for the gear, and I love everything secondhand. So for me, it was very important that most of my gear is secondhand. So I actually found most of the gear on Facebook Marketplace, which meant that I spent a lot of time on the internet because it's very specific gear you need for it. You know, like Audley bike bags, you don't find them so easily. So I spend a lot of time chasing after bags and drive somewhere in a random place and pick them up. And yeah, so bit by bit over a month, I got my gear together from all suburbs in Sydney, and a lot of different people are involved in my whole bike setup. Even my bike I bought on Facebook Marketplace.
I was going to ask you about your bike, actually. Was it something that you bought specifically for this tour?
Yes, because the bike I had before was actually just like a random bike someone put on the street to get picked up. And so it was like an aluminium bike, you know. It had two wheels and it rode, so perfect. But I knew for this journey I needed something out of steel, you know, that can carry the weight. So over a month I was looking on Facebook Marketplace. There are some very specific groups for backpacking. And yeah, so every day I was checking for a bike. And then finally one came up that was in my price range, because a lot of them were like way too expensive or way more than I wanted to spend on my first bike, packing bike, you know.
So what bike did you end up with?
It's a Marine Four Corners. It's a gravel bike. It's out of steel. And yeah, I actually love it. At first I was like, oof, it's like cobalt blue, which was not like maybe my color of choice. Now I'm totally happy with it. It's like, just as a child, I was wearing so much blue that I got so sick of blue that these days I'm just not wearing any blue or like anything in blue. But as a child, I was totally obsessed with the color blue. And yeah, I think it's very good. I heard it's a bit heavy, but I love my bike. I also love the cobalt blue now.
The memories that you have with that bike now, like, that's your bike for life. Whether however long you ride it for, I feel like if that bike ever retires, you hang it on a wall. Yeah, it's your family. It's part of you. It's an extension of you now. It's a, you know, an adventure enabling machine, which is fantastic. Okay, so you've got all of your things together. You've bought your bike, bought all the gear, got the idea. Did you do any specific training before actually setting off on this journey in Europe? Did you have a practice tour in Australia, riding a loaded bike?
Yeah, well, to be honest, that was the plan. But, you know, as planned, it never happened. So I did not have time to actually do a practice tour. There was a tour I wanted to do, like a 5-day tour to test all of my setup. But my friend was getting married in America, and after I was in America, a German friend came to visit me in Sydney, and then I showed her around in Australia, so I did not have any time for cycling. So actually, leading up to the journey, I probably did the least amount of cycling I had done for 2 years, and then when my German friend left, I had about 2 weeks left to do the final packing, to do the final arrangements. And in these 2 weeks, I tried to cycle every day. The coast in Sydney, which is actually quite hilly, so I tried to cycle the hardest and steepest hills I could find. But to be honest, and that wasn't even with a loaded bike, so nothing will prepare you for a bike touring trip, I think.
I love the idea that you were seeking out the hardest part of the Sydney coastline as well, like in preparation for this trip. It's just like, you know, I'm going to try to go hardcore because I haven't ridden much, so I'm just going to go bullet a gate and try the hardest that I can get, which is quite funny too. If I now fast forward you to, you've got your bike packed up on the plane, taking that 24-hour plane ride from Australia to Germany. It is a long flight. What are you thinking on that flight just before setting off? Like, it's all about to happen.
I think my whole flight was actually 35 hours in total. I was flying over America. I was flying over America. So my flight was Sydney, LA, LA, Denver, Denver, Frankfurt. And I think at the flight from Sydney to LA, I still was so stressed about, like, okay, here's the bike box. The bike box was so huge. So I think I didn't really, grasp what was actually happening because so much was going on. Then when the plane took off, I think I was just a bit sad, leaving Australia behind. And then when I finally landed in LA, I was just happy to see my bike box in one piece because I heard so many terrible stories about bike boxes arriving trashed. So yeah, I was just glad to see my bike. And then when I was in Denver, I was so physically tired and exhausted that I was just like sleeping at the airport. And then when I finally boarded that plane to Germany, I think I was crying a little bit because I have not been in Germany for like 4 years because of COVID. So I was just thinking, I'm finally going home. Yeah.
Nothing like a monumentally long period of travel and a bit of jet lag to really eke out all of the different emotions as well. So it's almost like there's two parts of your life that's coming together. The part that you remembered historically growing up in Germany and were revisiting, and then you were about to set out and find out more in your cycle tour and about your future life too.
Yeah.
So one of the things that you say was the principle for the route that you were taking from Germany to Turkey, Madeline, is no plan is my plan. What was the motivation behind this sort of motto?
I think the motivation behind that was just that I realized how bad I am in planning, because in Australia, I printed out two maps of Europe for me to draw my route on. So every morning I sat in front of this map and I was looking at this map and I'm like, maybe not today. I'm like, oh, I don't know. Oh, next day. So yeah, in the end, I kind of left without a plan. I mean, obviously at first there was the rough plan that I wanted to go from Frankfurt Airport to my hometown, which is Ludwigsburg by Stuttgart. So the first few days where the direction was kind of set. Yeah, and then it was kind of day by day. I spontaneously decided to go to France, which is obviously not on the way to Turkey. So yeah. And also I realized it is actually the best way to go, because it already started on the first day that when I cycled, so I was in Frankfurt and I put my bike back together at the airport and I started cycling out of the airport. That was my dream. So after 35 hours of flight, I put my bike together and started to cycle. And while I cycled, I met a guy and he told me about a lake and asked me if I wanted to come and have a look at the lake. And it was not on my route I wanted to go, but I thought, here's a local wanting to show me some beautiful nature. So I thought, why not? And I went with him to the lake. And when I arrived there, I found my first campsite because I looked at it and I was like, this is perfect. If I would have sticked to the plan, which was cycling, I think, to Offenburg that day, then I wouldn't have found this beautiful spot to camp. So sometimes if you plan too much, you're not so flexible and you might miss out on beautiful opportunities, like, for example, have a coffee with a local because you want to cycle a certain amount of kilometers that day. So I think sometimes it's better to not have a plan while bike touring, and you sleep wherever you get to in the evening. It really doesn't matter, most of the time at least.
I'm in agreeance with you 100% on having that sort of mindset when you're setting out on a cycle tour. Like, you sort of have a rough idea, I'm going from here and I want to end up here, but how I get there and what happens in the middle, I love incorporating that amount of flexibility. I also picked up that very early on, like, you had a cycling computer, a Garmin GPS device that you were going to be using for navigation, and you lost that. Was it day one or day two in your trip?
It might have been day four, maybe. I remember it was when I arrived in my hometown and I wanted to figure out how to actually use a Garmin because I've never used it before. And I bought this Garmin also on Marketplace. And yeah, when I was trying to find it, I realized I couldn't. And I thought, wow, I must have lost it. So I was devastated because I have never used this Garmin and especially bought it for this journey. It was meant to be my navigation system, which is probably the most important thing on this journey.
Yeah, it's one thing not to have a set detailed route plan to follow, but there is an element of each day you set off going, I'm going from this town to that town, and being able to have a device that tells you when to turn left, right, or stay straight on is really handy. So it feels like the universe was just throwing you out this extra challenge.
Yeah, indeed. At the beginning, I actually, because Germany has very good signs for cycling, so at the beginning I had like a piece of paper and I wrote the next town on it and the town after. So I taped this on my bike so I could see which town I should cycle to and which town comes after as navigation. That was quite funny.
So did you end up doing that for all of your route then? Like, did you end up sort of going day by day, town to town? Like, is that how your route, like, it started with great signage in Germany, and I can just imagine what it was like when you, say, hit Albania. but how did you navigate your way then?
Luckily, I didn't need to have to do this for the whole way. I was so lucky to meet a kind family on my second day, actually, of this journey, and they gave me access to their Komoot profile. So most of the journey, I was able to navigate with Komoot and didn't need to use pen and paper, luckily.
Komoot. Oh, I personally have mixed feelings about Komoot. And for the benefit of our listeners, Komoot, which is spelt with a K, is a navigation piece of navigating software used for planning cycle tours and hikes and the like, and allows you to, you know, look at software that brings up maps and brings up cycle-specific routes. It also has the ability to incorporate some very questionable routes into a tour and lead you down maybe what I would describe as the road much less travelled. You came across this a few times on your tour, didn't you? You had a few Komoot surprises to deal with.
Oh, yes, I had a few Komoot surprises. I called it Komoot did it again. Yeah, I had a few wonderful trails or no trails, or I'm like, oh, I was meant to turn here? Where? There's nothing. There's no path, nothing. But I think my favorite Komoot fail was crossing the border to Albania, literally bush bashing with my bike. So I was cycling on this very, very beautiful, modern paved road in Montenegro, and Komoot was leading me down this road, and suddenly this beautiful modern road
just stopped. It just stopped and turned into bushland. I was like shocked, and I was like, what's going on here? And I was thinking I should cross the border to Albania here. And on the side of the road, I saw like this tiny, tiny trail leading through the bushes. So I just left my bike there and I was scoping it out. And I was thinking, oh yeah, what to do? So I looked on my phone at the map and I saw that the detour would be, I don't know how many kilometers back around the mountains. So literally over the mountain again, down to the official border. And I was like, no way that I'm going back. So I started going with my bike through the bushes, pushing it over rocks. And at a certain stage, it just got so bumpy that I couldn't push the bike anymore. So I took all of my bags off, left the bike there, carried four bags half the way. Then I went back and then I carried my bike through these bushes and over rocks. And I was just thinking to myself, am I crossing the border to Albania illegally right now? Anyway, then I saw two boys there and they were coming towards me. Of course, they didn't speak any English. They also weren't really concerned to why I'm carrying my bike through this countryside. Yeah, of course, I was cursing a lot and I was thinking, oh my God, Kumud, I hate you so much. But yeah, Kumud did it again. And in the end, it really turned out that this was my border crossing to Albania.
Part of your blog, which is so great, is the photographs that coincide with each of your day, with your journal logs for each day. And I always chuckled when I came across the photo, which was like the Kumud selfie, which is like just this unimpressed face with like, the most non-cyclable bike route behind you. These are the memories that will live longest in your mind, and these are the stories that will grow larger and larger around a campfire.
It is.
So, Madeline, I want to read an extract actually from your blog, and it was from day 19 of your blog. And to set the scene for our listeners, you'd departed Germany, gone through France, and I believe was now in Switzerland, and you had looming on the horizon the Alps and the mountains, which you were about to start crossing. And reading through the way you were talking about this on your journal, it was sort of really clear there was almost a sense of trepidation of how will I go riding up these climbs? What are the mountains going to bring? Like there was this grand beauty of being in a beautiful place and you love your surroundings, but also they were quite ominous on the horizon for you. So you were heading to the St. Gotthard Pass, and I believe it was actually the climb before that pass, was it into Andermatt, I think? But what you were saying, you said in your journal, my thoughts were circling around a tip somebody gave me to pedal as slowly as possible. And then there I went, uphill continuously without stopping. I was amazed about the progress I made since I last cycled up a mountain. Even though it was already late afternoon, my body felt strong. But what was remarkable was my mind. The reason, Madeline, I wanted to speak about that was I think cycle touring people think, especially when they see someone with a loaded bike, full panniers, you know, the bike and your gear might weigh almost as much as you sometimes. It's seen as an act of physical endurance and a physical feat. But there's definitely a mental element to cycle touring, and your statement there sort of really spoke to me with past experiences. And I wanted to ask, was this like a light bulb moment for you when you were saying, my body was okay, but it was my mind?
Well, I think the mind is playing a huge role in all parts of life.
So even before the journey, when I told people about me wanting to cycle from Germany to Turkey, and they were looking at me with like disbelief. They were looking at me in disbelief and were thinking, why do you think you can do this? Because they felt like they could not do it. But I knew I could do it. I never had any doubt I could do it. And that, I thought, was exactly the reason why I can do it. Because I think I can do it. Like, your thoughts determine your future. And yes, I definitely was aware that without me wanting to get to Turkey, I won't get there. But because I knew I have my mind set on this goal, I had no doubt I will reach it. Like, there was no day of this journey where I thought I don't make it to Turkey. Of course, I had so many difficult days and so many challenges. But I knew I never give up. That's just not me. And of course, I also encountered days where I could feel that my mind was weak, and they were definitely the most difficult days. Not when my body was feeling weak. No, it was when my mind was feeling weak. And then sometimes I could feel how my body needed to drag my mind behind the bike, kind of thing. Yeah. But these days were difficult.
I just like to say, like, full commitment and belief, it's really inspiring to hear that. It really is. Because setting out on a journey this big with no plans, there's a lot of doubt and unknown, but the idea that you had this goal that you were fully committed to, I think you're correct, plays such a big part in you achieving what you set out to do. So fair play to you. That's awesome.
Thank you.
For this trip, you had your own camping equipment and stove with you because you were primarily hoping to do a mix of wild camping or camping, potentially also in official campsites, or being in a warm showers guest. What was it like wild camping? Was this something you had done before?
I have done a little bit of wild camping this year in America and then in Australia. But not solo. Then once before this journey, I practiced solo wild camping on a beach in Australia. But that was it. That was my whole experience before this journey.
And traveling solo and as a solo female traveler as well, what was that like then to be wild camping on your own?
At the beginning, it was obviously, yeah, quite an interesting and unusual experience. Most of the time I tried to find a very well hidden spot, because the only thing I think you really need to be afraid of are humans. So if no humans can see you, then I think you're safe, because there are not any wild animals really. But to be honest, on this whole journey, I slept best in the tent.
I love hearing you say that. It just sounds so empowering. It really does. It really is empowering. I think I might be asking you possibly the most impossible question, but what was the most scenic, beautiful wild camping site that you had for your whole trip?
Yeah, that's a very, very interesting question. There has been a lot of very beautiful spots. I mean, camping at the beach is obviously always really beautiful. I'm trying to remember. I had a really beautiful spot in Slovenia. Like, it was on the top of a headland between olive vines, between an olive orchard, sorry. But then it was quite funny because there was a huge thunderstorm, a terrible thunderstorm during the night, and I was literally fearing for my life. So probably the most scenic camp spot also turned into the scariest camp spot.
Far out. And is wild camping something you think that you will continue to do, you know, once, you know, this tour is finished.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've done a lot of camping in Australia, but like wild camping is even more fun. And yes, definitely. Like I love it. Like I love cooking dinner in front of the tent. I love waking up, cooking my coffee, and yeah, just sleeping at random spots. I mean, often, you know, of course you always dream of the scenic camp spots, but often you just need to put up with whatever you can find. So not every night you have like a beautiful camp spot. I had sometimes really random ones. Like I also realized I think I'm a cyclist. I like to push things more. So often I cycle too late into the night to actually find like the most scenic camp spots, while other people stop earlier to stay at the beautiful spots. So I slept at some very interesting places.
I guess the more interesting places you stop at makes you appreciate the more scenic ones when they do happen. Maybe that's the way to look at it.
Yeah, definitely.
When you were mentioning about camping and being on beautiful beaches and everything, there was a moment when you arrived in the city of Milan, beautiful, big, bustling Italian city, amazing architecture and lots of culture all around you. But you made a comment to say that you were craving nature and not being in a city again. Is that how, have you always been someone that would choose, say, a beach over, you know, the city lights? Are you a nature lover more than a city lover?
Well, I think I used to like cities when I was younger. I was living in New York and I loved the hustle and bustle in New York. Like I loved the city that never sleeps and so forth. But I think since living in Australia, in Sydney, you know, where a lot of nature is always surrounding me, the beaches, the harbour, the endless possibilities of hiking and national parks, I think I be in cities sometimes because also my interest kind of has changed. Like I'm not so interested in like going to restaurants and cafes or so. I rather enjoy beautiful landscapes and sleeping in nature and, yeah, making my own coffee at my campsite or having a campfire, sleeping under the stars.
They're all like beautiful camping rituals for me. In fact, actually, that very first coffee that gets brewed in the morning after the night in the tent, it's almost like a spiritual journey for me personally. So, Madeline, on your journey, you were really traveling on your own for many, many days. There were some times where you did have the company of other cycle tourists that you met along the way. What was that like?
Yeah, it was a huge change for me. Sometimes I enjoyed the company, but I also realized that I really love traveling on my own, especially cycling. You can go your own pace. I can stop whenever I want to take a photo. And also it was difficult for me because other bikepackers maybe have a different budget, and I like to keep it quite cheap. I like to cook for myself. And often I don't even stop for a lunch break. Like sometimes I scoff down some bread on the side of the road, while other travelers love to go to a restaurant or really stop for 1 or 2 hours. Well, I just like to keep going. So yeah, it was an interesting and also nice experience, especially for my last bit from Konya to Cappadocia, because there the temperatures were quite threatening. So it was nice to have some company for these kind of daunting moments with fog, snow, and -6 degrees.
Some really challenging conditions, which sort of actually puts it really starkly front of mind for me, because when you set out, you were leaving, you know, from Germany in, you know, a beautiful autumn. In fact, I think you had some really hot temperatures as well, if I recall correctly. And not only is your journey taking you across borders into new countries, speaking to people or not with, with foreign languages, seeing different sites and architecture, but you're also crossing seasons. And that must have added such a layer of complexity on to your tour as well, dealing with those weather extremes. What was your lowest moment in terms of weather? Was it hot weather or cold weather?
It was definitely cold weather. When I started my journey, it was literally summer. It was 30 degrees. And yes, of course, that was sometimes really hot, but it felt like you could always take layers off. I was cycling in crop top, and my summer seemed to be endless. So that was really beautiful. And then summer slowly turned into autumn, which was also wonderful because we don't really have autumn in Australia, so I really enjoyed cycling with, yeah, the leaves changing their colors. And but then suddenly, kind of 2 weeks ago, I started facing real winter, and yeah, that was like a slap in the face, because cycling in these conditions is, yeah, it's next level. Suddenly, I was facing minus degrees. I was unsure if my sleeping setup would be even sufficient enough for those temperatures. So every time I was camping, I was worried if my sleeping bag is warm enough. Literally visiting Decathlon in every city I could find Decathlon at. And always standing in front, or do I need another set of gloves? Do I need another buff? Is my sleeping bag warm enough? And then I was so lucky to meet a cyclist who gave me bike mitts, I think they're called. Like this cover I can put on my handlebars to protect my hands from wind. And I think they were a real lifesaver for me, because my hands and feet are actually quite sensitive for cold. They always freeze very easily, so without them, I wouldn't have made it. And also, I had the idea to actually put my rain gaiters for my shoes on. So, of course, they protect you from rain. It was not raining, but they also protect from wind. And they gave me quite a good cover in these threatening temperatures. And yeah, between Konya and Cappadocia, I was cycling with two other bike tourers, Marcel and Fraser. And we were all setting up our tents up next to each other to test our sleeping arrangements. It was minus 6 degrees were predicted for the night, so we wanted to test if we will be able to sleep in these degrees. And luckily, we all woke up the next day and were like, yeah, we were warm enough. So that was good news. And it was a test if I'm able to sleep with my setup on my own somewhere. Because if you have like touring buddies, of course, you could always share tents to stay warm enough. But if you're alone, you need to make sure your setup is good enough.
Oh, absolutely. And minus six is that can be bitterly, bitterly cold. It reminds me, I think you were in Greece, in a mountainous area of Greece, and was it one of your warm shower hosts actually gave you an extra sleeping bag of theirs, I think it was, wasn't it, so that you could travel and have some extra warmth because there were cold temperatures predicted to hit in the area, in the mountainous area that you were traveling to.
Yeah, exactly. It was a couch surfing host in Ioannina. He gave me an extra sleeping bag because I was meant to camp at Ios Lake, so on 1,400 meters height. And the temperature up there was 3 degrees, so probably the coldest I had experienced so far. And luckily, with both of those sleeping bags, I was warm enough.
So there's a couple of instances there where, you know, you received some kindness from strangers. You received, someone gave you the handlebar mitts, for lack of a better word, for your hands. You had an extra sleeping bag given to you at an earlier time. There were many, many times in your travel where you speak about it in your journal about the kindness of strangers. Was this something that you had expected to occur during your trip, or did this continually take you by surprise?
I mean, I didn't really expect it. However, I have watched a traveling vlog before of a guy who was hitchhiking the globe, a German guy, and I saw that he experienced a lot of hospitality by the people, got invited to lunch and dinner, and met with kindness. So I was, of course, wondering if I also will have such nice encounters on my journey, but you cannot take it for granted. And yes, I guess the amount of people who help you and, yeah, just the kindness I was met with really left me speechless. Like, in every country, people were really helpful, really kind, invited me into their houses. It's a really beautiful experience, and bike touring really gives you back the belief that people are good.
Yeah, it's almost like it's medicine for humanity, for your soul, isn't it? That there's that belief that we can be good human beings and there is good out there. Imagine a lot of these kind acts would have stirred up some emotions for you as well. I think there was a lady, I'm just trying to remember her name, was it Fatima?
Yeah, Fatma.
Yeah, Fatma, and she was a teacher, and I remember you were able to visit at her school, and there was quite an emotional moment that you had there.
Yes, that's correct. Fatma took me to her school to meet her students. I think they were about 10 years old. And yeah, I was having a lot of fun with her students. They tried to teach me Turkish dance, and Fatma was also telling them the background of my journey, so meeting my father for the first time. And for that reason, they wanted to teach me some Turkish words so I could say them to my father. And one of the girls wanted to teach me, "I love you, Daddy." And she wrote it down on a note for me, and she passed me the note. And in this moment, Fatma told me that this girl is kind of experiencing something similar I had experienced with my father. So I don't know the exact story, but I guess her father left her and her family behind. And yeah, it was quite emotional. I was looking at that girl and the girl who passed me the note, "I love you, Daddy." And it was really hard for me because she was tearing up and I was looking at that girl and she, I was feeling like I was looking at myself when I was that age. And yeah, I felt like I knew exactly what that girl was going through. So I couldn't just like let her sit there and cry. And yeah, it was like tears were literally running down my face. And I just went over to her and I gave her a hug, like kneeled down next to her and hugged her. Yeah, I felt so sad.
Raw emotions, unexpectedly, you know, there's the emotion of being frustrated at a Komoot trail, for example, or, you know, pushing yourself so you're looking for a campsite in the dark. But that's on a totally different level of emotion, really, unexpected.
Yes, it definitely sticks with me forever as well. Like, I was even reflecting on that scene when I left that beautiful village, and while I was cycling, I was again tearing up just for that girl and her emotions.
I think also because, as you said there, you felt the same emotions yourself, and it's through experience that probably hit you hardest.
Hello. Hello, listeners. It's Bella here, host and producer of Seek Travel Ride. Many of you have recently gotten in touch with me to find out how you might be able to support the show. I am an independent podcaster, which pretty much means I sort of do everything. I research my guests, I interview them, I put their audio together and I do an edit of that, and then obviously I release the episodes and market them as well. It's been a great experience now for just over a year, and we have 60 episodes in the bag as well. But pretty much if you do want to support the show and show some love to the content that I have been producing, I have recently set up a Buy Me a Coffee account. It's just a way that you can financially contribute to the show and put some funds towards the running costs of producing this podcast. I'm very proud to be an independent podcaster, and whilst it does mean there's a lot of work on this show at my end, it's an absolute joy to bring it to you at your end. I have included a link in the show notes to my Buy Me a Coffee account there, so if you want to support the show, just click on that link. Once again, thank you all so much for your support. Now let's get back to the episode.
Yeah. That probably hit me hardest. Also just seeing like such a small innocent girl not having done anything and like feeling such a pain and not understanding what is going on. So yes, probably because I also have experienced it and knew exactly how she felt.
I feel like I'm about to ask you a question that's that takes a different trajectory from this emotion. But I just want to let you know that I really feel it now, actually. it was almost about to make me cry. Sorry. Oh, far out. Good. No. We're good. We're good. Hold it together, sister. Cycle travel. Way to bring it all out. The tissues. Definitely. Okay. Let's talk about something different. Food. So, Madeline, am I right to think that you're a vegetarian?
Yes, I'm a vegetarian.
Well, there's two questions. The first one was it difficult to be a vegetarian on this tour?
No, I wouldn't say so. Almost in every country it was easy enough to find vegetarian food, and of course I try to mostly cook for myself anyway. I think Croatia was maybe the only country where I could not really try traditional food because mostly everything was turning around meat. But everywhere else I could also eat traditional food, and also the people who hosted had no problem cooking vegetarian food for me. Of course, I had difficulties eventually finding tofu, for example, but then you just need to eat something else like beans and chickpeas and lentils.
The countries you're traveling to, those legumes really start becoming more of a staple as well. So the second part of my question is, which country was your favorite based purely just on food?
I think Greece and Turkey, but I just say Greece now because Greece just really surprised me.
The Greek girl inside me is like cheering. Of course it is. What surprised you about the Greek food?
I mean, honestly, I've never been in Greece before, so everything of course took me by surprise. But you know, everybody's always talking about Italian food, but not that many people are talking about Greek food, and everything I ate in Greece was so delicious. Like, of course, I'm a vegetarian, so I eat a lot of vegetables, but how the vegetables were prepared was just like, wow, delicious, like mouth-watering. And yeah, also everything felt so wholesome there. Like the guy you mentioned before, who also gave me the sleeping bag, he cooked me a mushroom risotto with self-picked mushrooms. We had tea from herbs he picked himself. It just felt so wholesome in Greece, even in the whole Balkans. Everybody was making their own jam. Everybody was making their own cheese. I just loved all these little things. felt so good. And I think I had a Greek yogurt there. And to be honest, in Australia, I almost eat no dairy either. So I'm almost vegan in Australia, but not on this journey. And this Greek yogurt was self-made, and it was the best Greek yogurt I ever had in my whole life. I mean, no surprise, because it was in Greece, but it was so delicious. I almost could understand why people can't be vegan in such countries.
Flavor as intended as well. I'm just imagining also, and this is the Greek girl in me, were you ever offered, in Greek it's called tsai touvounou, which literally translates to tea of the mountain, so mountain tea, which is from a Greek herb that's collected wild, that grows wild on the mountain. Did you have that at all?
Oh yeah, I had a lot of mountain tea actually. I really love mountain tea. I also had it in Albania. I think it's the same, maybe Mali they call it there. But yes, this guy actually had also the mountain tea. And I think I even have some still in my pannier bags.
Well, something to fill you with joy when you, I imagine, I actually don't know, but if you are returning to Australia, you must be because you have a cat. The cat's only got 6 months worth of food. but you are able to, if you go to some Greek delis, they do sell the mountain tea. So it's all dry and you will be able to brew that tea for you, take it on a wild camp one day and have some mountain tea and think of Greece.
Oh, perfect. I'm already looking forward to like cook all the food I had on this journey and have like some new staples in my pantry, like mountain tea.
So reading your blog, Madeline, there was... You know, the only plan was that there were no plans. But there were a few days where you were around Albania and you seemed to be really torn between which way to go in terms of which roads to choose. And that was because you were torn with roads that would leave you in Albania, because I imagine there was a sense of wanting to discover that country more. But you also feel the road sort of pulling you, continuing on through to Macedonia. What do you think was behind this sort of internal struggle about which way to go, and specifically for Albania?
I think it was because I met so many people like on this journey which were hyping Albania a lot. So a lot of people I met, and I would ask, so what was your favorite country? They would tell me it was Albania. And how hospitable the people are there, how good the food is. And when I arrived in Albania, I had not such a good experience because, first of all, I got sick immediately. Like, my first day in Albania, unfortunately, I was, literally throwing up. And I was unsure why. But, yeah, so the first 2 weeks... I tried to recover from that illness, and then I got recommended this bike route to North Macedonia, and I felt like I was leaving Albania too early because I didn't have the experience everybody else had. So I guess because so many people were talking so warm about Albania, I had high expectations and felt like the expectations weren't fulfilled at that stage. So in the end, I actually returned to Albania because I wanted to discover this beautiful country more. And I'm glad I actually did return, even though also the time I had in North Macedonia was amazing. So I'm also glad I left Albania and came back, because North Macedonia is beautiful as well. I met some really kind people there, and yeah. It was fun to cycle there.
In the end, again, it goes back to you being able to say the only plan was that you had no plans, so you were able to experience both experiences. So I'm really glad that you were able to do that.
Yeah, that's right. No plan is my plan.
Something for me, and this is through thinking of my own plans for potential tours and whatnot, and specifically in cycling through the Balkan countries and regions, something that will often come up on cycling blogs about cycling there is you'll have to be aware of stray dogs. you did encounter stray dogs on multiple occasions in, I believe, multiple countries. How was that?
So, yeah, indeed. After Croatia, I think I experienced stray dogs in literally every country. I think it got worse and worse. And Greece was pretty bad for stray dogs, I think, because they are trained shepherd dogs, so they are very, very protective. And often you are surrounded by six of them. They literally create like a circle around you. They are massive dogs of different races. And also here in Turkey, they are quite fierce. So my strategy was to get off the bike kind of immediately when I see the dogs. Of course, I try to use my own judgment. Are they actually dangerous? Are they wagging their tail? Because some are only barking and staying on their property, but some are really chasing you down and try to bite you. So the safest strategy is to get off your bike, put the bike between you and the dog, and yell at the dog. So that's what I mainly did. But I also had the other strategy, which was like, I would just be like, I would come towards the dog and be like, good boy, who's a good boy? So I tried to talk really nicely to the dog. And yeah, sometimes that worked as well. It's quite funny when you meet a nice, like I also met a lot of nice dogs. And yeah, once I came to a campsite, and suddenly these two huge dogs were running towards me. But I really wanted to camp there because there was a shelter and it was raining. So I wanted to put my tent right under this shelter. And I was like, no, 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 I'm not going anywhere. You will need to be friends with me.
Did they become friends with you by the end?
They did become friends with me. They were success. Good watchdogs. And at the end, when I was leaving the next day, they were running after me and saying goodbye to me.
Unexpected friendships. That's great. So a journey of this length on a bike obviously takes a toll on the best bike, even the best secondhand Colboat blue bike. you had your fair share of mechanicals, it's safe to say. What was the most challenging mechanical that you had to deal with?
I think the most challenging mechanical thing was my broken shifter cable, because it was in the middle of nowhere in Bosnia. I actually had the bike serviced the day before because I knew I am going into really remote areas. And then it happened. I actually did not know what was going on with my bike in this moment. I just realized I couldn't shift anymore and it was stuck on the hardest gear, and I was meant to go up on a mountain on a gravel road. So not an ideal scenario. And I wasn't really experienced with drop bars before this journey, so I didn't really know how a shifter actually works, how it looks inside, and how to fix whatever was happening there. At a village which literally had four houses, and a man came out of this house and walked towards me and asked me in Croatian what was going on. And I asked him in English if he could speak English. And then he replied with the thickest Australian accent what my problem is.
Yeah, mate. No worries, mate.
Exactly. And I had the biggest smile on my face in this daunting situation. And I was just smiling and I was like, where are you from? And he's like, well, I'm from here, but I've been living for the last 14 years in Australia, Sydney. And then I was laughing even more. And it turned out that he was from Western Sydney. And luckily, he and his family was able to help me, was able to drive me to the bike shop so we could buy a new cable. And his uncle and father worked all together on my bike to put this cable into the shifter. And yeah, together we were able to make it work. And the family also hosted me in their house and fed me dinner and even gave me self-knitted slippers. So yeah, this pretty terrible experience for me, breaking down with the bike in the middle of nowhere and kind of thinking I'm really stuck there, turned out into something really beautiful and good.
It was like what could have been the most hopeless of situations in the most harshest type of terrain, to be stuck in your hardest gear especially. It just turned into just this moment of, it's beyond a silver lining for a grey cloud, I think. That's just beyond anything. And you couldn't write that in a movie script that was what was going to happen. It's amazing how you say the universe was looking after you that day.
Oh, yeah, it was. Like, bike touring really makes you believe in the universe, because every time something bad happens, there's always, like, you just need to trust that everything will be all right, and it always turned out to the better in so many hopeless situations.
I can only imagine, just, and for a journey of that length as well. So, Madeline, you set off, you travel through 11 countries, and before you know it, the moment comes where you're about to arrive at your destination, that moment where you're going to meet your father for the first time. What was it like?
Yeah, so I was cycling from Gürümme in Cappadocia to Kayseri, and I actually did not think that I will meet my father on that day, because he was in Mersin and was only to come back, meant to come back to Kayseri the day after, but does that mean I meet him today? And again, with no plan, I kind of started cycling towards Kayseri, and yeah, cycling towards it. It was a strange feeling, but I, to be honest, I didn't really know how I was feeling. I wasn't sure if I was ready. I mean, how would you be ever ready for such a moment anyway? I didn't know what I should think, what I should feel. I had no idea. And also, I was unsure where I want to meet him, or what was the plan when I'm in Kayseri. I had no idea. At first, I actually wanted to sleep somewhere else, because, of course, I don't actually know him, right? And so I was texting with a girl to sleep at her place. And the idea eventually was to go to her place first, have a shower, and then meet my father. But when I got close to Kayseri, I knew I want to arrive at his place with my bike. Like, I need to cycle there. This was the whole idea of my journey. I don't want to, like, get to a place, have a shower, and go to a cafe by car or by foot or even with my bike, but not, like, in that moment. So suddenly I just found myself cycling to his apartment, and when I arrived there, I was quite unsure what to do. I was just like standing in front of the apartment block, and I was like, okay. And now I was kind of like, what am I even doing here? I was like, So after a while, I thought, should I leave? Should I just go to the girl's apartment first? But then I actually sent him a text, and I was like, oh, I think I'm here. Think I'm at your place. And then he didn't reply for a while, so I thought, oh, maybe I should leave. And then he was suddenly calling me and said he would come downstairs, and I was turning my back to the apartment block, and I felt like I didn't want to look, like I suddenly got so shy, and I was just like, kind of, I don't know, maybe like hiding or like just turning my back to the door, like I didn't want to look. Like, I didn't dare to look. And then he was downstairs, and I could feel it behind me, but I still didn't want to turn around. And then I think he said hello. So I knew I need to turn around now. And yeah, still feeling very shy and weird. But then things kind of changed, because we got along really well, and I think the first thing he said actually was where I got my courage from. And yeah, then we chatted, and I actually felt
comfortable enough to stay at his place. And yeah, I think also in the days leading up to this meeting, I started to look forward to it, which I was always afraid of doing so, because, you know, I always wanted to have absolutely no expectations for this meeting to save myself from disappointment. So when I realized I'm anticipating this meeting, I thought it's very dangerous. It was also kind of a new feeling because, yeah, I think meeting all of these kind Turkish people, warm people who invite you for breakfast, invite you for chai, I thought, what if he's actually one of them? But I also didn't want to allow myself to think like that. Yeah, so the emotional struggle was real leading up to this.
Yeah, I can only imagine nervousness and shyness. And then that first moment where he says to you, where did you find your courage from? And, you know, Madeline, I do look back at your story of this amazing cycle tour, this fantastically committed, you know, solo female traveler embarking across various countries for so many months all on your own. And I think courageous would definitely be a word that I would put next to your name, amongst many others, you know, awesome, kick ass, you know, those sort of things as well.
Thank you.
Yeah. Wow. What an amazing story. So, Madeline, where can our listeners find out more about you?
Yeah, so my Instagram is I am Madeline Hoffman. But I guess about the journey, I write, of course, mostly on my blog. So my blog is called thejourneytomyself.travel.blog. Yeah, here you can reach every day from the beginning to actually meeting my father, to spending days with my father, cooking with my father. Yeah.
I will provide links to both your Instagram account and to your blog in our show notes so that you can follow along with Madeline there as well. And Madeline, I really hope that whilst your blog is a blog now, that one day we may actually see it in book form in bookstores as well. I really feel it's such a powerful and empowering story, and the more people that hear it, the better. So I have just two very quick-fire questions. I realise we've been speaking for some time now, and I wish I was there to share some chai with you while we were talking about this. But some very two last questions, which I also ask all my guests, and they are cycling-related. So the first one is, given a choice, would you prefer to cycle up a climb or pedal into a headwind?
Climb.
Climb every day of the week. For me as well. Great answer. And lastly, given the choice, would you rather cycle for 4 hours on your own or ride with other people? I feel I know the answer to this one.
4 hours on my own.
There we go. Well, Madeline, it has been an absolute pleasure to listen to you tell this story. I am so happy to be able to share it, and I will definitely be following along your journal and seeing what's next for you. My last request, when you go back to Australia, please eat all the Tim Tams, eat all the barbecue shapes, and enjoy a long walk from Bondi to Coogee for me.
Thank you so much. I will do all of these things for you whenever I will get back to Australia. Thank you for talking to me.
If you've enjoyed this episode and would like to support the podcast, please leave a rating and review. It really helps the podcast to grow and reach a wider audience. Also, feel free to share it with others and post about it on your social media. Lastly, do you have your own story you'd like to share with us? Then please get in touch by sending an email to podcast@seektravelride.com and request to be featured as a guest on the show. Until the next episode, I'm Bella Malloy. Thanks for listening.